Andu, Ani Bagineno, Jai Bhim. I'm sorry, with those lights I can't see the audience. Yeah. So I'm very glad indeed to be addressing you this morning. I particularly enjoyed the program that we've just had. It was a very good quality. And I was thinking that the Dhamma and art are very closely connected. If we're watching, dancing, if we're listening to music, we're uplifted. And we become very concentrated. So listening to music, watching, dancing, is quite like meditating. So I was particularly pleased that we started our program in that way. And I very much enjoyed the song. Unfortunately, I couldn't understand what was being sung. But I very much enjoyed the sound. So the sitar player and the tabla player had their cooperative bandi. Now it's Kumarajeev and I for our cooperative bandi. However, I'm not going to sing. I don't want to damage your ears. And Kumarajeev is not going to play the tabla. We're just going to talk about Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar. But that's a song in itself. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my understanding of Babasaheb's significance. Not just for people in India, but for people all over the world. So I will be doing a sort of song, a Jai Bhim song. But simply in words, not in music. So I'm very happy to be here in Goa. It really is a paradise in so many ways. Just so beautiful. Yesterday I did some sightseeing in the old city. And it is really very beautiful indeed. On Thursday evening I heard a little bit of Remo Fernandez singing. Thursday. So I've really arrived in Goa. But I must say I enjoyed our celebration this morning even more. And I'm very glad to have the opportunity to talk to you about my understanding of Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar's significance. And I really hope that as a result of my sharing my thoughts with you, you gain new inspiration, new courage, and new energy. Babasaheb was never able to come to Goa, as I understand. It was easier for him to go to England than it was to come to Goa. But Babasaheb nonetheless is here now in Goa. This morning I garlanded his statue in a very beautiful park. So Baba Sahib has come now to Goa. And his work is going forward here in Goa. So we need to think more carefully about that work. There's so much still to do. Yes, many people have followed Baba Sahib. Here in Goa, just a few people have converted to Buddha Dhamma. But still Baba Sahib's work is not done. Here in Goa, it's not done. All over India, it's still not complete. There is so much to do. So we really need to think quite carefully about what that work is and how each of us can take it forward. Baba Sahib is no more. He died 48 years ago. If he'd lived, we know he'd have been able to do so much more. But Baba Sahib passed away, and his work is now in our hands. Who else can do that work? Nobody. There's only us who can do it. So we need to take that work firmly in our hands and set to and do it. So let's try to understand clearly what that work is. And we can do that by considering Baba Sahib's own life and what he did and achieved. The first thing that Baba Sahib achieved was that he refused to be held down by caste. It was a very strong personal achievement of his. He came from a community that was very much oppressed. You remember when he first went to school, he wasn't allowed to sit in the classroom properly? He wasn't allowed to go to the blackboard. You know that he had so many experiences of this kind. And he had to suffer from a very much more rigid caste system than we have today. But Baba Sahib refused to be held down by that system. He managed to get a very good education indeed. He had 4 doctorates. He'd been to some of the best universities in the West. And all his teachers had a very high opinion of him. He was obviously a man of exceptional intelligence and talent. And he pulled himself out from where he had been born. So that's the first thing we should remember about Baba Sahib. He ended as perhaps the greatest Indian of the 20th century. By the time he died, in many ways he had the greatest impact of anybody. And he came from such a low state. How did he get there? Well, yes, he had some help. But principally he got there by his own strong efforts. So this is a very important lesson for all of us. We may not be Baba Sahib, but we can do what Baba Sahib did. We can rise above the circumstances we find ourselves in. So that's the first thing that we learn from Baba Sahib. That's our personal work. Every one of us can do what Baba Sahib did. And I know that many of you have already achieved a lot in this way. But then the next thing to notice about Baba Sahib is that he used his talents for the benefit of others. He was such a well-educated man. He was a barrister at law. And, well, lawyers can make a lot of money. Baba Sahib could have become a very rich man and enjoyed a really comfortable life for himself. But right from the time that he returned to India, he dedicated himself to other people. Somebody was telling me the other day that he didn't even have enough money properly to pay for his house. And it was only through the intervention of a kind friend that he was able to buy his own house. All his money went on helping others and increasing his library so that he could educate himself further. Baba Sahib could have just had such a rich and comfortable life. But he refused to do that. He gave himself to his people. So this is something very important to remember for us too. Each of us must remember the people that we have come from. I think this is something very important for today's generations. I don't know what it's like in Goa, but in other parts of India, some Buddhists, some followers of Baba Sahib have done quite well for themselves. And their children, well, they've got very good education. And they begin to forget where they've come from. And they forget the people who are still suffering. Baba Sahib didn't do that. He, even though he had a wonderful education, even though he had wonderful opportunity, he did not forget the people he'd come from. And all through his life he struggled for their benefit. It seems to me that actually he wore himself out in that work. He wasn't such an old man when he died. But he'd given all his efforts to helping his people. And he wore himself out. So this is Baba Sahib's work. It's working for the benefit of others. And this we can follow him in. Not just lifting ourselves up, but bringing others with us. This is the work that Baba Sahib initiated. Then Baba Sahib engaged in quite a number of different campaigns to gain rights for those who were deprived of them.
And
For instance, he led the Mahat Tank Satyagraha. He tried to get temple entry. He tried to do land reform. He tried to get trade union rights. In so many areas, he struggled for political and social uplift. And all his life, wherever he saw injustice, he tried to fight against it. Well, that work is not complete. Injustice is still there. So if we want to complete Baba Sahib's work, we have to take up that work. But Baba Sahib had the opportunity, had the strength of character and courage to enter even into government. Pandit Nehru saw what a great man Baba Sahib was. He had a very high opinion of his talents and his skills. So Baba Sahib was appointed the chairman of the drafting committee for the new Indian constitution. And we know that, see, he drafted it almost entirely himself. When I was flying down here, I was looking at the newspaper. A Mumbai newspaper. And one man who owns a restaurant, a hotel there, was talking about his experience. And he said that Baba Sahib used to come to that hotel every day and write at the table. And he said he saw him drafting the constitution in his own hotel. I'd really like to visit that place myself. But yes, Baba Sahib did this work. And he formed for India, the Independent Republic of India, a really wonderful constitution. You remember that many years before, he burnt the Manusmriti. The Manusmriti, which had laid down the social code for India up until that time. And that social code was based on inequality. It was based on what Baba Sahib called the system of graded inequality, which is caste. And as a symbol of his rejection of that system, he burnt the Manusmriti. But now he replaced the Manusmriti with the Constitution of the Republic of India. And that constitution was based on the great principles of liberty, equality and fraternity. What an achievement for somebody coming from his background. According to Manusmriti, he was at the lowest point in the whole system. But he himself formed the new system. This is our Baba Sahib. This is this great man who we follow. Baba Sahib realized that social justice could only come through liberty, equality and fraternity. The whole old system had to go. And it had to be replaced by a democratic, free society. And he formulated that in his constitution. And all Indians now benefit from that work. India is a great country. It is the biggest democracy on this world, on this earth. And it is one of the wonders of the world, this democratic system. I'm sure that many of you are all too aware of the problems in Indian politics. But we mustn't forget what an enormous achievement the Indian constitution and democracy is. Yes, democracy. Before the British left India, they thought Indian people can't be democratic. I'm afraid the British used to think that the Indians were like children and they needed to look after them. And they thought, well, the Indians couldn't be democratic. It's only we white people who can be democratic. That's what they thought. But Baba Sahib proved them wrong. India has been a peaceful democracy for more than 50 years. So many other countries that were occupied by colonial countries have gained independence. But most of them have had dictators and military coups and so on. Well, India had a little bit of an emergency. But very quickly that emergency was turned over. India has been a consistently democratic country since independence. And it's the only one of the major formerly colonial countries that has that history. Well, a lot of thanks must be due to Baba Sahib. Such a carefully thought out constitution. So carefully balanced all the different units. And a tremendous change has happened in India because of that constitution. And we can hardly believe how different it is from 60 years ago. But Baba Sahib himself was not satisfied. He quite quickly felt frustrated. He felt that even though he'd introduced this wonderful constitution, the social system still was strong. And for him, the big symbol of this was the refusal to accept the Hindu code bill. That Hindu code bill was trying to set up an equity for women. And it was thrown out by the forces of conservatism in Indian society. So for Baba Sahib, this was a symbol of the way in which the old system tried to endure.
आणि म्हणून बाबासाहेब एक प्रतीक होतो बाबासाहेबांचे की हे की जी जुनी समाज पद्धती आहे ती कायम राहण्यासाठी किती प्रयत्नशील आहे.
So the question was how to go forward. He said, well, the constitution is like a beautiful temple. You build a beautiful temple and then who comes and lives in the temple? It's a temple for God, let's say. And so he said, well, who's come to live in this beautiful temple? A devil has come to live in it. So he said, well, he said even he would feel he should burn the constitution. However beautiful the temple, what counts is the God who lives in the temple. And it was the same old devil that moved into the temple. So how to change the devil into a god? This was Babasaheb's question. How to change the social system of India? The wonderful constitution, that makes some difference. But a constitution is only as good as the people who live in that constitution. You can have a democracy, but if people don't have a democratic mind, it won't really be democratic. So Babasaheb felt quite frustrated. He felt he'd done everything he could in political struggle. He'd achieved the highest achievement a man can make in politics. He'd given his whole great nation its constitution. But he felt that was not enough. And he began to think, well, what more could be done? Well, he'd been thinking about this, of course, for many years. Really, right from his childhood, been thinking about these things. And many years before, in the 1930s, he declared that he was not going to die in the old religion. He wasn't going to die in it. He wasn't going to die as a member of it. That old religion had accorded him no status. He was not going to die as a member of it. But he had to think what religion to take. He looked at all the world religions. He felt it was very important that there was a religion. Because he saw that religion underlies morality. There has to be some underpinning for morality. Morality rests on a foundation. Morality rests on the foundation of meaning and purpose for human life. Morality comes from that philosophy, that view, which is religious. If there was to be liberty, equality and fraternity in India, there had to be morality. Liberty, equality and fraternity come naturally when people behave morally. If people don't commit violence against each other, then there's liberty. If they don't commit violence and oppress each other, then there's equality. If they love each other, then there's fraternity. And it's morality that teaches us what's right and wrong in our behavior with others. Morality teaches us how not to harm others, how to help them. But morality rests upon an understanding of what life is for. So for instance, if you believe that some people are born into this life because they've done good deeds in the past and therefore they have a high status, and because of that they should be worshipped like gods, well, that gives a certain kind of morality, you could call it. So the beliefs that you have determine the way in which you behave towards other people. So you believe that people are born into a certain community, so they should be treated badly. Because you have those beliefs, you behave towards them in that way. I was brought up in the Christian religion. And of course, even here in Goa, there was a history of persecution. Christians don't do this anymore, of course. But here in Goa, I've read the history books, people were burned if they didn't believe in Christianity. So you have certain beliefs, and as a result of those beliefs, you behave in certain ways towards other people. So our beliefs determine our morality. If we don't have any beliefs at all, then we don't behave morally at all. If we have the wrong beliefs, our behavior towards other people is actually wrong behavior. So Baba Sahib thought it was really important that the right religion was chosen, which would support a genuine morality. And it should be a morality that was based on liberty, equality and fraternity. So Baba Sahib looked at world religion, and he looked very closely at the different religions. And one thing he's particularly sensitive to was the caste in those religions. And again and again, not just in the old Indian religion, he found caste there. The Indian caste system can take over any religion and turn it into a caste system. And so he concluded that none of these religions were the appropriate ones. He was looking for a religion that did not conflict with science. He felt that the new religion had to be in harmony with modern scientific thinking. It had to be a religion that did not ask people to believe impossible things. It shouldn't be a religion that just required blind faith. It should be a religion that allowed people to think and to think for themselves. It should be a religion that relied on people's own direct experience. It shouldn't be a religion where you just waited for the Saviour to come and take you to heaven. It shouldn't be a religion that's just like a bus stop. You just stand at the bus stop and you wait for the bus to come. And the bus has on the front of it heaven. You just get on the bus and it takes you to heaven. But it shouldn't be a religion like that. Because of course they don't really take you to heaven. They don't really take you to heaven. They just take your money and then they get you lost. So Baba said it should be a religion that depends on your own responsibility, your own efforts. It should be a religion that doesn't insult your intelligence, so that you could think and be a highly educated man like him and still see that religion as your religion. So Baba Sahib was looking for a religion that didn't conflict with science. Then he was looking for a religion that didn't conflict with liberty, equality and fraternity. He wanted a religion which supported liberty, equality and fraternity. Not a religion that said, oh well, these people are high and these people are low. Not a religion said that it's all right for those people just to be slaves of the village. Not a religion that said that these people are not really human beings. It should be a religion that supported liberty, equality and fraternity. So Baba Sahib looked at world religions and he came to the conclusion that the Buddha Dhamma was the only religion that fulfilled those criteria. The Buddha Dhamma is based upon personal experience. The Buddha is a Margadatta, not Mokshadatta. The Buddha can't give you liberation. You have to get liberation for yourself. The effort is yours. So the Buddha is not a bus driver who just drives you to moksha. But the Buddha is a guide. He says that if you go this way, you can gain freedom. And he walks along with you. He doesn't float down from the sky, he walks along beside you. The Buddha was a man like us. He was just like us. And he himself changed himself into the Buddha. So the Buddha says, we can each do what he's done. So it depends on your own experience, your own efforts. At one point somebody said, well, how do we know that what you're saying is true? So the Buddha said, test my words like the goldsmith tests gold in the fire. If somebody comes to you with some gold and says something that is colored gold and says, here, buy this. Before you buy it, you want to know whether it really is gold or not. So the goldsmiths have some way of finding out whether it's gold or not. They prove it for themselves. So the Buddha said, my words are just like that. Don't just take them. Test them out for yourself. And this is, of course, the scientific way. This is what science is about. It's testing your observations. It's not just accepting things on trust. Any theory you have, you test it through experiment. So we are the experiment in science, in Buddhism. We are our own laboratory. And we are working on ourselves to change ourselves into the Buddha. So Baba Sahib thought that the Buddha Dhamma fulfilled that criteria. The Buddha Dhamma does not conflict with reason. It doesn't ask you to believe things that you can't prove. The Buddha Dhamma asks you to trust your own experience only. To listen only to your teachers as a way of discovering in your own experience. Then he chose the Buddha Dhamma because liberty, equality and fraternity were essential to it. ...2,500 years ago, the Buddha initiated a revolution against caste. In so many of the suttas, the Buddha talks against caste. In fact, he laughs at caste. And there are many jokes by the Buddha against the caste system. And he said when people entered his sangha, they left behind their caste identity. Just as the great rivers, when they flow into the ocean, lose their separate identities. The Brahmaputra, the Ganges, and what's the river here? Huh? The river here. Manduri River. When it gets to the sea, it just becomes the sea. I went over the bridge and I saw that river. But that water then joins the Arabian Sea. And you can't say, oh, well, this is our Goan water. That's the Maharashtrians, that's not ours. It's just water. So just like that, when you join the Sangha, you lose your old caste identity. So the Buddha Dhamma has no inequality. It leaves people free. It says that every individual should fulfill themselves. It says that everybody is equal in that they can all become Buddhas. And it says that we're all brothers and sisters in that attempt to become like the Buddha. So Baba Sahib said that the Buddha Dhamma was the religion for the new India. He considered that the Buddha Dhamma would create the basis for genuine Sila. And from that genuine Sila would come liberty, equality and fraternity. There was the constitution that guaranteed liberty, equality and fraternity. And now the morality would flow into that constitution. So that was Baba Sahib's reason for choosing the Buddha Dhamma. The Buddha Dhamma gives the basis for the change in mentality. it changes the devil of caste into the God of equality. As a result of practicing the Buddha Dhamma, you get rid of caste mentality.
With
caste mentality that every Indian has got. Some have got it more than others, but my experience is that most Indians have some caste mentality. Now, I often say that, well, I come from England, we don't have caste there. We have got problems, but there's not caste. So I'm very conscious that of caste when I come across it. People have got, in India have got that caste program in their computers. They've got that program in their minds and they see everything in those terms. They say, ah, Gaikwad. Ah, Kumble. Ah, Joshi. Kulkarni, yeah. And I say, it just looks like a human being to me. I can't see the caste. If you get an Indian on a table and you cut him open, you won't find caste in there. Scheduled caste blood is the same as Brahmin blood. If you give a Brahmin a blood transfusion from a scheduled caste person, he doesn't die. And so on. Caste isn't a fact. Caste is not something you can observe with a microscope. Caste is made up. Where is it made up? In there. It doesn't exist out there. I can't see it. I haven't got that chip in my brain. But you've all got it. Buddha Dhamma teaches you how to change the program. It's not easy, but through practicing Buddha Dhamma, you change that program. You take out the... What do you call it? I can't remember. You take out the floppy, and you put in a new floppy. So only Buddha Dhamma, according to Baba Sahib, enables you to put a new floppy in. But it's not an automatic process. There's a lot of work involved in changing the program. A lot of work is required. And the Buddha Dhamma teaches you how to make that work. The Buddha Dhamma is the basis for a whole social revolution. So for instance, if you join the... if you become a Buddhist, well, how do you get rid of castes? Well, first of all, you welcome anybody who wants to be your brother and sister in the Dhamma. You don't say, are you Aplilog or not? What was the Konkani for? What was the Konkani? Huh?
Amshawani.
You don't say that. It took me a long time to realize that this actually just meant caste. So when somebody comes along and says, well, I want to be a Buddhist, you don't say, are you Aplilog or not? Amshamani. And if they're Amshamani, come in.
Amshamani Nayi, go away. A bit like, you know, the police sometimes have these metal detectors. So you have at the door an Amshamani detector. And when it goes through and it's not Amshamani, the bell rings. I'm afraid every Indian has got one of these metal detectors. So the first thing is you throw away the metal detector. You just see people as human beings. You think sarva log apne log ahe. In Konkani? What is it in Konkani? Sabli log amche. Sabli log amche. So you welcome everybody as your brother and sister. In the first place, you don't say, are they Buddhists or not Buddhists? You don't say that. You just say they're human beings. And you say, welcome. And then if they are Buddhists, well, you don't say, well, which caste are they? As soon as you become a Buddhist, you lose your caste. You become a human being dedicated to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. So we really have to live this. And we have to make a strong effort to get this out of our minds. And in the end, of course, the main thing is we need to be prepared to marry outside our old community. I know how difficult this is. I know how difficult this is. I know that in India, this is a very difficult issue. I've studied these things with my friends. But the world doesn't change if we're frightened. If we're frightened of difficulties, the world won't change. If Baba Sahib had said, well, I can't move above my caste status, the world wouldn't have changed. If Baba Sahib had said, oh, I will have many difficulties, so I won't do that work, what would have happened? Nothing would have happened. India would not have changed as much as it has done. So we have to have the courage to change. And we've got the example of that great leader, Baba Sahib. Baba Sahib was a lion of a man. When he spoke, he roared like a lion. I've got some recordings of him giving talks. And he roars like a lion. When the lion roars, other animals go quiet. When Baba Sahib roared, everybody else went quiet. Okay? You are Baba Sahib's sons and daughters. So what does that make you? Lions. You are lions too. So you must roar like lions. You must not be afraid of what will come. This means breaking out of the old caste mentality. Having the courage to go outside your own old community in marriage. If we don't do that, nothing will change.
Buddhism will just become another caste. And India will not change. India will not change. This is what we're facing now even. There's a tendency for Buddhism just to be a caste. And Baba Saheb's dream was of a Buddhist India. He thought that only if India became Buddhist could there be liberty, equality and fraternity. So his effort was to convert the whole of India. At least to have people from many, many different communities. Who would be a real example of liberty, equality and fraternity. And who could show other Indians that you don't need to live with caste. So I ask you to consider all this very carefully. Baba Saheb's revolution was a Dhamma revolution. He believed very strongly that in the end, a change in mentality was needed. Gaining political rights was not enough. Even establishing a free constitution was not enough. There had to be a whole change in the mentality of Indian citizens. So we ourselves have to undertake this work. We have to ourselves be true Buddhists. Those of you who have not converted to Buddhism, please think carefully about this. This was a very serious issue for Baba Saheb. It was not just at the end of his life, he couldn't think what to do, so he became a Buddhist. Becoming a Buddhist was the final act, the most important act of Baba Saheb's life. So if you say Jai Bhim, you need to think very carefully about this. We need to have a whole new way of conversions to Buddhism. And not just within the old community, but among Indians of all different sections of society. So I really ask you, those of you who are not Buddhists yet, to consider this very carefully. Why not follow Baba Saheb in this? Why not? Why not think about why Baba Saheb did this? Why not follow him all the way in his work? Why not follow him to the end of his work? And those of you who are Buddhists, why not spread the Dhamma much more widely? Remember your lions. You can roar the lion's roar of the Dhamma. You can roar that lion's roar to others from the old community. But you can roar that lion's roar to anybody in society. There are good people in all sections of Indian society. There are very good people in all sections of Indian society. There are people from so-called higher castes who don't like the caste system. There are people who want a genuine religion. So why not go to them? Why not communicate the Dhamma to them? And in that way you will begin to fulfill Baba Saheb's work. This work is in your hands. It's up to you to complete it. It's up to you to complete it by the coming Buddhist, if you're not already. If you are Buddhist, it's up to you to spread the Dhamma much more widely in Indian society. And it's up to you to get the program of caste out of your mind. If you think in caste terms, you're not being a genuine Buddhist. You're not fulfilling fraternity. So this is the work that I would like you to think about taking up. Think very carefully about your following Baba Sahib. Follow Baba Sahib all the way. Have the courage to face the difficulties that will come. If you are like Baba Sahib, those difficulties will not be big. An elephant is huge. But to an elephant, an ant is tiny. So be an elephant, not an ant. And think difficulties are small. And yes, think about completing Baba Sahib's work. And one thing that's very important is that we should complete that work in the spirit of the Buddha Dhamma. I was very pleased indeed that I received garlands from quite a number of different groups here in Goa. And that meant to me that the Buddhists and other Ambedkarites of Goa are working somewhat in harmony. Harmony is so important. People will not want to come to you if you're quarrelling. There are plenty of other people quarrelling, so they don't need to come to you. They're probably quarrelling in their own homes, so why should they come to you for quarrelling? People don't like quarrelling. Quarrelling is ugly. Harmony is beautiful. You heard the tabla and the sitar. It was the way in which the tabla and the sitar worked together that was so beautiful. And I must say that our two musicians, that their harmony was so beautiful. I was enjoying their friendship in the music. Music is a real example of what society should be. The whole of society should be one big cooperative bundy. So we should be harmonious. Just imagine if the sitar decided to play one melody. And the tabla player decided on a different tal. And that the two instruments would be fighting each other. We put our hands over our ears and leave the room. It's because they played together in harmony that we wanted to listen. But it's the same with our work together. If some of us are playing one tune and others another tune, people won't want to be with us. They'll say, well, they're just like all the other people, just forming more and more groups, more and more factions. Let us be an example of harmony. Let us be an example of people working together cooperatively. We can all do different work. We can even approach that work in different ways. But the fact that there are many different ways of doing things doesn't mean that they're quarrelling with each other. A garden consists of many beautiful flowers. Each of those flowers grows in its own way. We don't cut them all down and just have one sort of flower. We enjoy the variety and beauty. So we can have many approaches to the Buddha Dhamma. In TBMSG we have one approach. Mr. Goenka has another approach. Bhatya Bhada Mahasabha has another approach. But that's okay, they don't conflict. They're different flowers growing in the same, in different ways. But if they cooperate with each other, they make a beautiful Buddhist garden. The tabla is a quite different instrument from the sitar. But when they play beautifully together, they make such a wonderful sound. So we should be like that. All our different groups, all our different work can go forward. We're each working in a different way. But it's the same work. It's Baba Sahib's work. It's the Buddha's work. And as long as we're working for Baba Sahib, as long as we're working for the Buddha, we're not in conflict. Now I know there are not many Buddhists here in Goa yet. Although I hope that very soon there will be thousands and even lakhs. If you all think carefully and if you do your work properly, there will be lakhs of Buddhists here in Goa. But at the moment, there are few of you. Well, please work together harmoniously. Don't quarrel with each other. If you work together harmoniously, there will be lakhs of Buddhists here in Goa. If you quarrel with each other, there will be fewer Buddhists than there are now. So let's work together harmoniously. We in TBMSG are very happy to work with anybody doing Baba Sahib's work. We're happy to work with anybody doing the Buddha's work. We don't say TBMSG is Aplilo. Amche Mansam Mani. We don't have a new kind of caste. TBMSG caste. We say we're all Buddhists. And we're all doing our work in different ways. We're all sons and daughters of Baba Sahib. You work in your way, we work in ours. But together we make beautiful music. So please, take these words seriously. It's something that upsets me very much indeed. Even in our own TBMSG, we have quarrels. And there are so many quarrels between different Buddhist groups. There are so many quarrels within the Ambedkarite movement. Then people spend their time shouting against each other. Instead of doing the work, they're shouting at each other. And personally, I find that very upsetting. I find harmony so beautiful. I really love harmony. So I'd like to find harmony wherever I go. So I hope that here in Goa, you'll be able to be harmonious. And that means being able to deal with differences between you. And if you can work together in that way, you really can make a big difference in Goa. Goa is such a lovely city, such a lovely state. It's such a sort of paradise. But you have to have the proper people to live in paradise. You need to have people who can live in harmony. People who help each other. So become the right people to live in this paradise. So please, if you haven't converted to Buddhism, think very carefully about what I've said. Just think that through converting to Buddhism, you will be taking forward Baba Sahib's work. Baba Sahib's dream was of a Buddhist India. In fact, he wanted Buddhism to be worldwide. He wanted to start a worldwide Buddhist mission. Because he thought that the Buddha Dhamma was the basis for world peace. World peace. Through practicing the Buddha Dhamma, people would experience liberty, equality and fraternity in every country of the world. So through conversion to Buddhism, you're making a contribution to world peace. If you are already a Buddhist, really be a Buddhist. Wipe out that program. Wipe out the program of caste. Really practice Buddhism. And take it to others. Go out much more vigorously. Don't be afraid. Have the courage that Baba Sahib had. And work harmoniously together. That's what we've really got to offer people. What we've got to offer people is our fraternity with each other. That's what they will be attracted to. So, I hope that my words are helpful to you. I hope they will help you to relaunch the work of Baba Sahib. We're approaching the 50th year since Baba Sahib died. We're approaching the 50th year since Baba Sahib died. The 50th year since Baba Sahib converted to the Buddha Dhamma. In the 50 years since he converted, not much has happened. Not many new Buddhists have come. In 1991, some converted here in Goa. But in not many other places has much conversion taken place. So we should celebrate Baba Sahib's 50th anniversary of conversion with a new wave of conversion. And that work is in your hands. Jai Bhim. Jai Bhim.